It was just past 7 p.m., Halloween night, and young Justin was tugging at his mask, becoming more impatient by the second.
"Susan, hurry up! I don't want to miss trick-or-treating," he shouted at his sister.
His older cousin Marcus, their babysitter for the evening, shooed him along towards the front door, insisting he quiet down while his sister finished changing into her costume. Justin couldn't wait. He had his silver shamrock mask and a huge pillowcase to fill with candy. He had chosen the pumpkin mask at the grocery store earlier that week, a toss-up between that or the skull. After what seemed like an eternity, his younger sister emerged, dressed as a witch, complete with her own silver shamrock mask.
"Can we please go now?" Justin half whined, half grumbled.
His cousin Marcus ushered them out the door and onto the driveway. There were already other kids everywhere, up and down the sidewalks.
"Hurry up, Susan," Justin called out as he jogged towards the street, "before all the good candy's gone."
Susan scrambled to keep up with her brother as they made their way down the street. There was a full moon out, looming ominously in the sky, and a crisp chill in the autumn air. It was a perfect night for trick or treating. Justin had a feeling this was going to be a Halloween to remember. Little did he know that it was to be his last. Malevolent Masks, A Bite-Sized Fright. This series contains disturbing content. Listener discretion is advised. Justin's pillowcase was already nearly full, crammed with all sorts of candy and treats as he, his sister, and Marcus plodded down the street about an hour after they'd started out. He'd noticed dozens of other kids out trick-or-treating in silver shamrock masks as well, pumpkins, witches, and skulls. Marcus had promised to let them visit a haunted house he'd heard about at school. He wasn't quite sure what it was, but his friends all said that it was extra scary, or so they'd heard. As the trio came to the end of the block, he suddenly saw it there, on the other side of the street. The haunted house. That had to be it. It was everything you'd expect. A dilapidated old building with broken shutters, dead grass, knee-high weeds growing in the yard, swaying in the chilly evening breeze. He'd never noticed this house before. Were they still in his neighborhood? Justin wasn't sure. "Not a word to your parents about this," Marcus had warned Justin and his sister. They slowly approached the house, the shrieking of children filling the air, mixed with cackling laughter. Justin and his sister made their way up the creaking, rotted steps to the porch of the house, where a sinister-looking figure dressed in a long black cloak bade them enter. Justin looked back hesitantly as they entered the house. No sign of Marcus. It seemed that he was going to let them go in by themselves after all. Justin felt his sister reach out to clutch his hand as they stepped into the foyer of the house. Justin could feel her small hand trembling.
"It'll be okay, Susan," he whispered.
The grandfather clock somewhere in the house chimed a dissonant tone, and scattered footsteps thumped throughout the house around them. As they passed through an entryway into some sort of living room, Justin felt huge, sticky cobwebs draping down, clinging to his shoulders as they walked.
"Yuck," he said aloud. He wasn't sure if they were real, but they looked real, and Justin hated spiders.
They circled around the living room and came upon an accent table with an ornate bowl set out on it. Inside the bowl were round, squishy spheres floating in some sort of gelatinous goo. Next to the bowl was a crudely drawn sign. "Fresh eyeballs. Help yourself."
"Gross," Justin muttered as he heard his sister giggle behind him. "Come on, Susan," he said as they left the room.
The pair passed through a shadowy corridor with alcoves on either side. A dark figure sat in a rocking chair in one of the alcoves, covered in bandages, rocking back and forth slowly, the rickety chair creaking with each movement. Justin and his sister attempted to tiptoe past the mysterious figure. Whatever it was groaned and lurched towards them as they passed,
causing his sister to shriek as they broke into a run, hurrying down the passageway. Justin felt a cold sweat breaking out on his forehead underneath the pungent rubber mask he was wearing. Reaching the end of the corridor, in front of them was an imposing, winding staircase. No one had ever made it to the top floor of the house. At least, that's what his friends at school had said. Justin gulped as they approached the stairs. The wood creaked and groaned beneath their feet as they slowly climbed the stairs one at a time. Justin wondered if the steps might just give way underneath them. Maybe that was why no one had reached the top floor of the old, decrepit house. As they rounded the first corner of the stairs, Justin thought that he saw a shadow in the corner of his eye, but when he glanced sideways quickly, he saw nothing there. Probably just his imagination playing tricks on him. A split second later, a young boy barreled down the stairs next to them, heading for the door, bleating and screaming bloody murder and nearly knocking Justin and his sister right over. "Watch it!" Justin yelled after him. Whatever had scared that kid must have gotten him good, he thought to himself. Justin steadied himself and gripped his sister's hand. "Hang on to me, Susan," he whispered as they climbed the squeaking steps. As they finally arrived at the end of the stairs, they came to a long, dimly lit hallway. Justin wiped his sweaty hands on his pants and took his sister's hand back in his. "This is it," he thought. "The top floor." Pale orange light from sconces along the walls glowed and flickered faintly, barely lighting the path in front of them. Justin and Susan crept down the hallway, unsure of what awaited them at the end. They were almost there. Justin wondered if they'd win a prize of some sort for reaching the top floor of this spooky old house. They passed door after door. Justin's eyes swept back and forth from left to right as he braced himself for someone or something to leap out at them. As they neared what he thought was the end of the hallway, they paused. Something was odd about the floor. It seemed to be moving. Justin peered down through the eye holes of his mask. Snakes. Dozens of them squirming beneath their feet. He let out a startled shout and grabbed his sister's hand, yanking her backwards as he staggered and stumbled away from the writhing mass of reptiles. "Susan, come on, let's get out of here," Justin cried out. As they turned, a pale, ghastly vision appeared at the end of the hallway, hanging in the air, then suddenly moving towards them. It was semi-opaque, with a grey, greenish tint, and grotesque. Multiple gaping mouths with jagged, misshapen teeth dotted the entity, and leering, sunken eyes of all shapes and sizes burned with an otherworldly glow. Stricken with panic and unable to scream, Justin and Susan turned and ran as fast as they could down the hallway, but it seemed to stretch on forever, almost closing in on them as they ran. The phantasm behind them drew ever closer, and a guttural voice called out, "Tasty morsels! I'll split your head open and suck out your brains!" Susan cried out, and Justin gripped her hand tighter. "Keep running!" Justin called out to her. They finally reached the end of the hallway and tumbled onto the stairs, hurrying down them recklessly, banging into the walls as they rounded the corners and made their way downstairs. Justin caught his foot on the second-to-last step as they reached the bottom of the stairs and crashed down onto the floor, sprawling out as his sister landed with a thud on top of him. He felt the wind go out of him with a wheeze, and then, in an instant, they were back outside on the porch. What had just happened? How did they get outside? Justin checked to make sure he hadn't wet himself. "Sorry, buddy. I guess the haunted house must be closed this year," Marcus said with a huff. "Guess we came all this way for nothing." Justin was bewildered. His sister didn't say a word. They imagined the whole thing. Maybe this haunted house was an elaborate prank, he thought. The kids go in, get scared to death, then the adults pretend it never happened. Regardless, Justin would have one hell of a story for his classmates at school. Suddenly, he remembered to check his watch. Nearly 9 o'clock. It was almost time for the big giveaway. "Marcus, we've got to go. We'll miss the big giveaway on TV," Justin shouted. "All right, all right. Let's get going," Marcus replied. They hurried back through the neighborhood and arrived back at their house without a minute to spare. Justin and Susan raced to the den, switching on the TV and plopped down on the carpet in front of it.
"It's time! It's time, kids! Time for the big giveaway! Gather round your TV sets and put on your masks," a voice called out from the TV. A glowing orange jack-o'-lantern appeared on the screen, pulsating as hypnotic music began to play. Justin was entranced by the image. He couldn't look away. His head was beginning to feel warm. The mask was getting hot. He pulled at it, but it wouldn't come off. The music grew louder, echoing in his head. The rubber mask grew hotter and began to burn, sticking to his skin. Justin screamed, clawing at the mask, digging his fingers deep into the latex as he collapsed onto the floor. Snakes, worms, maggots, and slimy, vile creatures oozed out of his mouth and nose as he writhed on the floor, pouring out of the holes in the mask as he clutched and grasped at his head to no avail. Out of the corner of his eye, he spotted his sister, Susan, pulling and tugging uselessly at her witch mask, the smell of burning rubber heavy in the air as she fell backwards onto their parents' couch. "Oh my God," Justin thought he heard Marcus cry out. "Jesus Christ, what is this?" Justin's vision began to fade as the sinister music reverberated around him, and he felt his consciousness finally slip away. The story you just heard is loosely based on the events depicted in Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. In 1982, the filmmakers behind the wildly successful Halloween movies decided to put Michael Myers to rest and create a standalone movie. The plan was to launch an anthology series with a new movie each year, focusing on a different aspect of the Halloween season. But this plan was ill-fated, and the absence of Michael Myers proved to be disastrous to the film's success. Only 6 years later, Michael was back in Halloween 4, and the plans for the anthology series were shelved indefinitely. While not a critical or financial success at the time, Halloween 3 has gained a cult following over the years, largely due to the popularity of the sinister masks manufactured by the Silver Shamrock Company. Masks have been the key focus in other chilling tales of fiction as well. The Goosebumps novel, The Haunted Mask, by R.L. Stein, is about a girl who buys a Halloween mask, then begins to behave differently after putting it on. Finally, she becomes unable to remove the mask, finding that it has become her permanent face. No one can deny that the very nature of masks is ominous, and somewhat creepy, or downright evil, some might say. The masks in this story actually killed its victims, so their malevolence was directed at the wearers. However, masks have other connections with the concept of evil throughout history. One of the most famous examples is the ancient Celtic feast of Samhain, which contributed to the origins of modern-day Halloween celebrations. At this festival, guests would often don the masks of wicked spirits in order to disguise themselves as such beings, so that they would blend in with them and not be harmed. This was considered particularly important because during Samhain, the veil between the world of the living and the world of the dead was believed to be at its thinnest, meaning one would expect many spirits indeed to be roaming the earthly plane. This is not the only early example of masks being connected to otherworldly spirits. The ancient Igbo people, who hail from an area that now roughly corresponds to parts of Nigeria and Equatorial Guinea, performed rituals wearing masks that represented various spirits. These rituals allowed the wearers of the masks to be possessed by the ghosts of their ancestors and other supernatural beings, thus letting them share in their wisdom and power. However, many of the spirits were murderous and vile, causing the beings they inhabited to lash out violently, sometimes with fatal results. In fact, many tribes that performed such rituals made sure to restrain the mask wearers with chains to prevent them from attacking bystanders. If a mask wearer should injure or even kill someone, the mask was considered to be the culprit, rather than the wearer,
as such masks were believed to have a will of their own. Later, in the 12th century, the Carnival of Venice became a regular occurrence, finally reaching its peak in the 17th century. Masks quickly found their way into this festival as well, their primary purpose being to allow nobility to hide their true identities from the rest of the carnival goers, and often engage in activities that would otherwise have been highly detrimental to their reputations. Men and women alike engaged in all manner of excessive drinking, lewd sexual acts and debauchery, all whilst hiding behind a disguise. In a sense, it can be said that these masks had a psychological effect on the wearers, allowing them to behave in a much more mischievous and perhaps even depraved manner than they would normally. Masks were made forbidden, and the carnival as a whole was abolished in 1797, perhaps because some people strayed too far into the realm of illegal behavior. The carnival resurfaced briefly during the 19th century, and was finally officially relaunched nearly 200 years later, in 1979. As Halloween became more popular as a holiday throughout the 20th century, especially in the United States due to the influx of Irish settlers, more and more companies began to manufacture masks of all sorts, grotesque monsters, cartoon, movie and TV characters, and caricatures of famous politicians and celebrities. Numerous iconic movie villains have donned masks over the years. The aforementioned Michael Myers, who famously wore a heavily modified William Shatner mask. Jason Voorhees from the Friday the 13th series, who hid his deformed face behind a cloth sack and later a hockey mask. And Ghostface from the Scream movies, who derives his name from a rubber Halloween mask partly based on Edvard Munch's painting, The Scream. Other sinister film characters, such as Leatherface, wore a mask crafted from the skin of his victims, a concept inspired by real-life killer Ed Gein, who we've covered in a previous episode of Bite-Sized Frights, entitled The Real Life Leatherface. These days, masks are mostly reserved for trick-or-treating and parties, and are thus far removed from their more mysterious origins. Still, that doesn't mean that some truth cannot be found in the ancient beliefs that were so prevalent many years ago. What do you think? Is it possible that some masks can protect you or hide you from evil spirits? Or could certain masks indeed spell your doom if you were to wear them? Or at the very least, make you guilty of acts that your normal, unmasked self would never commit? True, these stories may seem like exaggerations, but just in case, the next time a mysterious mask calls out to you at a store in the days leading up to Halloween, perhaps you should listen a little more to your gut, and less to the wicked spirits who may be trapped inside such a dastardly disguise. Perhaps hell-bent on luring you to death's door, or perhaps eager to fill your mind with murderous motives and injurious intentions. We would love to hear your own thoughts and ideas about these malevolent masks. If you have enjoyed this episode, please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at PixelElixir, and on Instagram at Bite-Sized Frights. You can also subscribe at BiteSizedFrights.com so that you never miss any of our terrifying tales. This has been a Pixel Elixir production, narrated by Chris Kay. Thank you for listening. Until the next bite, my friends.